as is so frequently expressed in our meetings, thanks to the grace of God in AA. Most of us learn about the grace of God through experience with someone who has known of it and who is able to mediate it to us. The entire movement has come to know of the grace of God as it has been mediated to us, expressed to us in tangible form by our next speaker. I look forward to this opportunity of chairing the meeting because it would give me an opportunity to meet her. And I'm very happy that she has been able to come to the coast and be with us this afternoon so that you may feel and come to know the sweetness of her spirit, the depth of her concern, and the effectiveness of her service to suffering alcoholics. Sister Ignatius.
Friends, in fact, I feel Alcoholics Anonymous is part of my family, really. I know that God works in mysterious ways. How little I thought when I entered the convent that I would spend my days, at least as many of them as I have, in caring for alcoholics. But God works in mysterious ways, and certainly the divine providence has directed all this. I feel. He can use very weak instruments to carry out his designs. But in our vantage point, as I know Colonel Pound would say, you see many wonderful results. Nothing short of miracles. We are not into a lot of imaginary things, but certainly God is extremely kind to the alcoholic. Because the contract in home heart, he'll never refuse to help and give him a grace he needs. I feel that it's a privilege to work in this field. I owe much to my community. When Bill called me about this, I certainly could hardly think of appearing on a program like this. And as I said, well, it's something like the AA third step. We turn our life and our will over to God under the direction of our superiors. My superiors never sent word at any time I was taking more. It came down to that, nearly to that point in a few cases. But thank God, and the fervent prayers of, well, I suppose many of the sisters who were interested, and the Reverend Dr. Bob, and Karen himself. Somehow we weathered it through. I just, you asked me to say a few words about how we got started in Athens. I hardly knew myself. I was sent there in 1928, the doctor recommended occupational therapy, change of occupation for a while. I was in the field of music, and as you know, that's rather new back then. I was sent to St. Thomas, which was just opened in 1928, and it was there I met Dr. Bob. We had an open staff the first year because we didn't know the men, nor did they know us. Doctor operated at our hospital and the other hospitals. I didn't know they had a drinking problem, and in fact, I wouldn't have known it had he not told me so, because he didn't come to the hospital when he was drinking, evidently. Oh, I can recall sometimes his voice was rather reverberating. I could hear him when he came into that door. He had a decided English accent, New England accent. Somehow I liked him because he was still so straightforward. Those of us working on hospitals know that some doctors make everything an emergency, a matter of life or death. Others will tell you the exact truth about the case. say, well, my patients wait a few days, or if they can't, then you know that you take them for what they say. However, the doctor is so straightforward, so I enjoyed working with him. And one day he called, he looked rather down. We often have little chats. And this morning he said, he looked rather down. I said, Doctor, what's the trouble this morning? Well, then he told me. He said, well, sister, he said, I might as well tell you that I came in contact with a New York broker and I've had a drinking problem for a long time, and somehow we got together and we've all tried to work out something that will help these drunks, he said. Well, he said, we've been trying it out. They tried a few rest homes, and we had some in the other hospitals. And he said, sister, would you consider taking one? Well, I hesitated because sometime before, oh, probably some months before, I took a man in who, oh, he looked, I didn't know much about this drinking. I knew some could drink. And some could drink and handle it, well, others couldn't. So they called me to the emergency and I went down top of him. Oh, he said, this guy just fell down a little while. He worked at the city garage and looked like a very respectable person. But I've been drinking a little too much and I'm a little stiff right now. Which I thought was a good thing. Well, the only bet that we had at the time was a bed in a four-bedroom. Then we knew nothing about special treatment. And I signed to the man on service, on medical service, and registered him, put him to bed, and I said, you won't cause any trouble. Oh, no, he'd be an angel. Well, I forgot about him. When I came over early the next morning, the night supervisor, who was a tall sister, we all teased her on a lot of big feet. Well, she was standing at the door waiting for me. She said, the next time you take a DT in this place, please stay up all night and run around after him as we have. That wasn't the end of it either. I decided then that's enough. I always felt sorry to see them turned away, but I was not the last word in the hospital. So when Dr. proposed my taking a real look, because I thought a real look, rather than having my misgivings, I thought, oh dear me. I told him about this experience and I said, Doctor, not only will I be put out, but I said, the patients and everything else, I said, I didn't think they wanted alcoholics. He said, sister, this patient won't give you a bit of trouble because I will medicate him, I'll assure you. Well, I had much confidence in him because he never said anything that wasn't so, and I'll always say that. Well, very carefully, I said, well, that's what I shall take him then. And put him in a two-bedroom. I thought I was doing pretty well because we were so crowded in those days, and that's rather offensive. So I took him to this two-bedroom. Doctor went up and medicated him and everything. And I thought, well, I figured I wouldn't hear much till the next morning anyway if there was any trouble. So there was a word about it. Doctor then came to the attending office. Thank you. Would you mind putting my patient in a private room? I thought I'd done pretty good to put him in a two-bedroom. He said, you know, he said there'd be some men come to visit him, and they'd like to talk to him privately. Well, I said, I'll do what I can, Doctor. After he left, I went up and looked the situation over. And right across the hall, we had a flower room where we used to prepare the patient's flowers. And I thought, well, they can pick their flowers somewhere else for today, and I believe I could push the bed in there. That's what we did. When his visitors came, we kept a close eye on them. It was all you. rather respectable-looking men, they don't know that somebody ever took a drink. And, well, then, Alan, I thought now the next time I won't have this trouble, I'll put him in a private room. So the next one that came along, I put him in a private room. And, see, I didn't know much about these alcoholics. I was not an expert, surely, the Lord picked out a weak ring when he picked out me, I know. But, however, I took him down to the room, as I would any patient, and then he was taking a chart to the desk to explain to the nurse a little about it. I couldn't tell her too much. I said Dr. Bob would give her the orders. And he wasn't down after me. Well, he had his short tongue and everything else. I nearly went through the floor because the nurses all looked and everything. And you go past that room, we'll be right down. So the nurse came down with me. And here he was under the bed. Well, I thought this will never work. This will go at all. I'd better put two together the next time. I didn't want to give up at once. I don't know just exactly what I did, whether I have someone stay with him or what I did. But I know after that, I couldn't put two together, and then finally took a four-bedroom. That seemed to go pretty good. One would help the other. Usually, one or two would be in a few days before they'd be coming out of it pretty well. And then, so then we took another two-bed across the hall. Well, it was hard to say no when they really wanted to do something about it. And by that time, men were coming in quite often. So I saw some of the sisters said, "Who are these fine-looking men that come in so often and seem so interested in the patients?" And I didn't say much at first, but later I said, "Well, that is AA." I said, "What is AA? Would you like to know something about it?" "Well, yes. Well, I'll bring some literature." But, of course, before that, a committee from Alcoholics Anonymous talked with Sister Superior. She's one who had a lot of experience in the old days of charity and all. And she knew what we were doing. And she said to these men, she said, "Well, strange," she said, "when you have a charity, they'd be running around in the hall and they'd be in a lot of trouble. But since Dr. Bob is treating them, we don't know that they're in the house." So she said, "There's no problem. As far as I can see, just go right along." Well, that was wonderful. But that wasn't all. Of course, I'm waiting patients to complain because they didn't have visitors at any time. If these AA kids, they seem like such privileged characters. So finally, they decided to, we had a small accident ward. It was sort of off in the rest of the hospital. And there we put in a coffee bar and got there about, set up the pilgrim. I will not tell you that the first opportunity he had, he brought a bill over. And, of course, I couldn't imagine who this wonderful bill was. But I soon learned that God had chosen two great men. What one didn't have, the other supplemented. And together, they were perfect. I could just see, I often say to our boys, that now I've picked out two great religious leaders, no one would have come near them. Because the alcoholic doesn't want anything about religion or God, nor do we try to preach religion to them. But they aren't in for very long until they're asking or telling you what experience they've had and what they'd like to do. They know they haven't been living right. And I feel that, as many of our nurses have said, the best set of it is peace of mind. If once they can be relieved of their anxieties and worries and treated properly, there should be no trouble. But when we first come in and the doctor set up the pilgrim, no televisions, no radios, no newspapers, only literature pertaining to AA or something that would have a building of morals and things of that kind. So they don't, they have all the reading they can take care of, and then their visitors, too. Well, we went on with that. There's so many details I could bring in, but I don't want to make it too long because I know many of you have probably questions that maybe Phil Thomas could answer some of these People know much more than I. But anyway, during Doctor's time, I think we treated between 4,000 and 5,000. And he treated them. He came in every day unless he was out of town or something like that. And without any charge, he said, that's my transition to AA. Back in those days, we didn't have too much either to start with. And he couldn't mention money very well. So how much of it cost? Because it was just getting sober has been a great deal. But that was taken care of later on. Thank God. It worked out very well. And there are no problems. Oh, many times, whether they have or they don't, we take them in because God certainly provides. And a man who gets his own is everlastingly grateful. Doctors, as far as I understand, sometimes you make rounds and they come down and they say, sister, look at me, go home, he doesn't want this problem. Oh, but Doctor has a big thing, he has to set me up. Doesn't want the problem, sister, he's ready. So he was always right. Many times they frighten me, once they have a heart, or they would tell me they have a bad heart or something. And I hate it to bother Doctor too much. Often I call, and I think members of this group, or any alcoholic, should often say a prayer for Anne. Because she was the backbone of this. In her calm, quiet way, she was really an angel. I would call and say, oh, Anne, I'm so worried about this fellow. She knew most of them from either reputation or doctor telling about them. And he would get to the doctor if it was anything serious, but otherwise he'd say, don't worry about them. Because, well, they have a they're alibiologists, in other words. Another drink or a treatment of some kind. So, now, when you take them at once, that's what doctors plan to. I thought, oh my, that's kind of strict, isn't it? But oh, I see the wisdom of it. Because if there's a merry-go-round, when that temptation comes, they're going to think, well, I can get back in there for 5 or 6 days, well, that'll be all right. Sisters would too take me back. And I'd only encourage my drinking. They know that it's a one-way trip. The sponsors, and Colonel Pound said they are, their cooperation is tremendous. Any hospital who tries to just take them in on their own is very foolish because they need the sponsorship. I often say it's something like learning the technique of golf. You may know all the angles and all the rules, but unless you get out there in the field and do some footwork and practice, you won't be much of a golfer. So we tried, Dr. felt if they could be taken out of the environment. At first, it was just 5 days because people were pretty depleted after the depression and all, financially. And the sooner we get them back to their families, the better. Although many of those first AAs were taken into their own homes and tried to help indoctrinate them. They worked in groups. It was marvelous what they did. But however, we certainly have found that it was very wise. Because the sponsor will not bring them until they are ready. And then we squeeze them carefully and goes over it. We want to be sure that sponsor is not just a person they met in a bar somewhere. But I usually have some persons to attend to, but now I know most of them well. Know who are good sponsors, knowing that. But it's a tremendous help. So finally, the time came, well, as Anne, of course, died in 49. And that was very hard for doctors. He called from the Cleveland Airport. They had just gotten in from Texas and said, the plane was down. It wasn't doing. They don't know more about this than I. Anyway, they brought it directly to the hospital. And we kept Doctor there, too. Because they were all shaken up with all this. And Anne died of pneumonia and all that. So, went on from there. Doctor then died in 1950, a year and a half later. He knew then, I believe, that he had an emergency. He had talked with Bill Well, I think that several times a week, if not every other day, he gave me a little message. And I felt as though I knew they all in his guiding spirit, too, because there wasn't very much done that they didn't consult together on. Especially anything affecting this, the foundation of this. Then, one day, I got worried. We're just like people in the Army, you know, we go to where we're sent. I often wondered whether I was off the mailing list or whether I was forgotten. I was there 24 years. Probably 1 week short of 24 years. And finally, the obedience came. And I was to go to charity and work with AA there. They haven't had AA at charity and fine workers there, but they just had a small department. And Sister Victorine, a very fine sister, who everybody knows, was there too. And she came down and we told her everything, and Dr. Bob talked with her. And she really did a good job. But they decided to build a new wing and all the extra. Oh, I know they thought Alcoholics Anonymous was a thrill, and they're not, but everything was discontinued. It wasn't absolutely a case of life or death. So they just kind of forgot about AA. But Reverend Mother didn't see so much good in it, and I know. I went there in August, and I didn't hear a word about, other than on my obedience, it said, that I was to take care of this floor and visit the spaces and work at AA. Well, I mean, someday maybe we'd have them. But anyway, I just observed and went along day by day. Finally, one day, I got a call. I was in surgery checking on the patient to see, find out the condition. They were worried about this patient, and the bell rang furiously, and the superior wants you to see on your floor. And I came down, and the architect of the new building was there, and a few nurses, the director of our nursing service was there, and of course, Siri said, what kind of a setup would you like for this AA? Well, even then, you stand in the middle of the floor, and feeling rather strange, I didn't know whether to call myself or not just yet. And I didn't think very fast, so this nurse said, well, sister, are they violent? I said, no, they're not violent. Oh, they're not intoxicated. Yes, they are intoxicated. But they're clear enough to be screening because we must make sure that they want the person. Well, because the architect, you won't need those cases then. Well, I said to Nancy Rodney, would you mind? Give me a few days and we'll drop a little plan of what we'd like. Fine. Well, the day that they came, was on a beach bus, Ladies of Rosary, that's how we call it, Rosary Hall. And there is a step connected with that. When I was moving, I thought, oh, I'd love to have this in memory of Dr. Bob. Well, I thought I'd get the permission rather than call it the Alcoholic Ward. We'll call it Rosary Hall. And it's thinking of Martin that Rose, R.H. Well, I thought all I needed is a mess, and I have doctor's initials, R.H.S. And I was told to skip. So we called it Rosary Hall Solarium. The insignia on the door is RHS. Permission to open the Warren's Grandfather Hospital for the Holy on October 7th, 1952. Peace and Most Holy Rosary. I feel that to people, whether they're in the church or of whatever their denomination, when you see a rosary, you know it means prayer. People get the rosary out, well, you think they're praying somehow. So to everyone, I think this is all a result of someone's prayer. The grace of God comes through someone's prayer and penance, that's for sure. Well, anyway, the is a staff out in the Rosary Hall, Solarium. Well, I told you about that. The insignia eloquently expresses the efforts of the Sisters of Charity, St. Augustine, adopt a religious order as they join forces with the members of AA, a strictly non-sectarian movement, in an attempt to rescue men and women of all creeds from the bottomless pit of alcoholism. Be admitted to this ward, you must be sponsored by a member of AA in good standing. You must offer evidence of desire, not just to get sober, but also to preserve and perpetuate your sobriety on a day-by-day basis. Unless you yourself are willing to admit that you are an alcoholic, you are advised to seek help elsewhere. The physical therapy is the most modern known to medical science. The patient's entire stay is a return from the outside world and the habits which have caused his collapse. There are no radios, televisions, newspapers, and magazines. Nothing but any literature and other literature in keeping with the problems are available. The patient may have no visitors except members of Alcoholics Anonymous, who are welcome between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. The conversation includes alcoholism and its ravaging problems. Every evening, a member of AA comes to the hospital to conduct a brief AA meeting with the patient. An attractive coffee bar stands in the center of the hall where AA members and the patients often gather to discuss their common problems. A little oratory is open to all kinds. Just, if they want to do some prayerful thinking, it's there. The remodeling and construction work that is learning was done by members of AA who contributed their time and money. Members who belong to the building trade work day and night during these spare hours to complete the building quarters at no cost to the hospital. Woodley Hall accepted its first patient 1 year ago, and since that date, 1,000 men and women have been hospitalized therein. We haven't much room for women. We haven't gotten more. Oh, we have three. We have three. Sometimes four, and even it's stretched to five. But that isn't good. However, the Rosie Hall accepted its first patient 1 year ago, and since that date, well, pardon me for repeating, they have been offered not only the key to sobriety, but also the key to a happy sobriety. The sisters of charity and members of Alcoholics Anonymous who have assisted them in declining individual credit. They are aware that it is in giving we receive. Well, God bless you all, and I wish you a continued happy sobriety, and may God's grace be with you always and bless every one of you. Thank you.
Dr. Bob's New England accent. And one of the strange ways which God works is that he selected two men from Vermont to found our group. The governor of Vermont, taking notice of this, has declared a national or a statewide celebration. Now, whether this is to celebrate the founding of AA or the departure from Vermont of our founders, no one is quite sure. But in any event, one of them is here and would like to respond very briefly now because he has to go on to Sister Ignatius' talk. Bill? We all know that AA is a quest for sobriety. Therefore, it is a quest for freedom. We all know that there is no freedom except as we banish the blocks of fear and pride and all of their consequences. And then a wider freedom in all of our affairs puts in its appearance. We make ourselves worthy under God's grace. Now then, for such a pursuit, we obviously need high ideals and high examples of those ideas. People who demonstrate in their own lives true greatness of spirit and greatness of action. You have heard and seen and have no doubt felt through the language of the heart which Sister has spoken that we are in the presence of not only one of our greatest benefactors, but in the presence of a person who is possessed on the greatness of spirit, on the greatness of action, and that seldom will any of us achieve. I'm going to talk more about sisters tonight, But I wanted to say this much, because it will bear repeating over and over. And this affecting resurrection of the memories of our pioneering time stirs me beyond description, as I see it has you, and should. There were others in this hospital field, and you have heard the son of one of them, who carries on the tradition of his father. I came in just as Ed finished. I regret that I didn't hear it all. The junk, even in the hospital, clearly needs something more than physical treatment. He needs those around him who understand, who minister not only drugs, but confidence and greatness in action and spirit. Ed was such a one, is such a one, and so is his father. And I might remind you, if I forget it tonight, that it was Ed's father, in a very early and uncertain time of this society indeed, who invited us back to visit patients in his hospital. And when the proposal for the book Alcoholics came along, and no money was to be seen, he put it on the line. And the day we took the garbled manuscript to the printer at Cornwall and checked into a hotel and ran up a bill, I had to go back to New York and ask Ed's father for enough dough to get us out of the hotel. This is going quite a ways beyond just hospitalizing drunks. So we have with us this pioneer, Ed's father, and the succession in Ed. And there was also another man, my doctor, Dr. Silkworth. God knows how this man was possessed of greatness in spirit and action. As somebody once aptly titled the Grapevine Pace, this was the little doctor who loved drugs. And he loved them so much that for a long season, his life was a failure measured in any ordinary terms. They never claimed in the early days to cure drunks in up at Ed Towns' place. And there Dr. Silkworth presided. And now and then, one would get it. And always the little man came along. To each case, as though it were a fresh opportunity. And I think in his lifetime pre-AA, he had ministered in all this eagerness and dedication to some 20,000 drunks, all or nearly all, who proceeded to succumb. And he, with them and their relatives, had to walk the last mile. This is the kind of dedication, greatness in spirit and action. And then after AA, more recoveries, and before Dr. Silkworth passed on to his reward, he and our nurse, A, Nurse Teddy, down there at Process, something like 10,000 with a good batting average. So these were the first examples of hospital facilities, plus people of goodwill, that were offered to us. And the speakers to follow are here because they are men who want to carry on in that tradition of the pioneers. And I thank God for their interest. For there is no single thing that AA needs beyond improved communication with the millions who don't yet know than it is appropriate hospitalization. Something which, as you see, if it is to be effective, goes far beyond just medication. What rising young doctor cares to medicate some drunks to sober them up,
so that the butcher, the banker, and the plumber comes in to sober him up permanently. This is not a career. But some doctors are dedicated to this sort of thing, nevertheless, and more are becoming dedicated, and others are looking into our minds to see where the hidden springs are broken, and others are looking into test tubes to see what ails us physically. For all these folks, God bless them all. I'm so happy to be here to say, even for a minute, the things that are in all of our hearts. And I regret that I'm hedgehopping to the next meeting. See you.